Hello, my name's Tom Walker. Welcome to That'll Be the Day. In this podcast, I'm going to be featuring an edition of the BBC Radio 4 In Touch programme I was asked to present from Northern Ireland in January 2017. But before we hear the programme, if you like the sound of the music at the start of this podcast, it's a track called That'll Be the Day by the Liverpool band The Vow. And as always, I'll be featuring a track by the band at the end of this podcast. To find out which one it is, stay tuned. While I was in Northern Ireland, I recorded three radio pieces with interesting and extraordinary visually impaired people. I hope you enjoy the programme as much as I enjoyed recording it. Good evening from Belfast, very busy main bus station, which is full of people rushing in all directions after a day's work. I'll be setting off from here around Northern Ireland to meet three people who prove that the visually impaired and human spirit can be indomitable. In a country whose love for music is legendary, it's almost inevitable that I'll run into people who've made it an integral part of their lives. Maybe less predictable, however, anywhere in the United Kingdom is laughter yoga.
And this week, I am very excited because I am recording a piece for In Touch.
I'm now on a bus heading to Omagh, which is just over an hour and a half from Belfast. I'm going to meet up with Claire Bowes, who, at the age of 15, lost her sight in the Omagh bombing of 1998.
Hi, Tom.
It's Tom from the In Touch programme. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you.
I'll get the kettle on.
Brilliant.
I remember sort of being thrown to the ground, and I had no sight straight away, but at that time thought that maybe just some dirt or something had got into my eyes. Never for one second sort of realised the extent of my injuries. I knew that I had lost a lot of blood because I'd had to cut my jeans and that off me because to check for other injuries. But the only injuries I actually had was across the bridge of my nose. So I was in surgery that night when I got there, and that was to remove a piece of metal. I then spent a further 2 weeks in hospital where I had another few surgeries, one of which was to remove my right eye. And I remember at the time when they told me they were going to have to remove my right eye, I was devastated. You know, I was 15. Up until this stage, everything in my life had been completely normal. And I was been dealt this blow that I was having an eye removed. And I sort of, you know, all the usual things. God, what am I going to look like? Is it going to look really different?
Yeah.
Nobody's going to be interested in me with only one eye. You know, all these sort of thoughts. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there was nothing could be done. When I initially lost my sight on the 15th of August, I didn't get out of bed for a week because I was too scared to. I couldn't cope. I suppose it was the whole trauma of it. Maybe some denial. But I was too afraid to get out of bed. And then I got home sort of at the end of August, so I was at home for a week or so. So then did start having to try and make my way around a bit myself. And that was a strange experience because like it was a house that was so familiar to me beforehand and I had to relearn everything again.
Was it one of those houses that was full of ornaments and things that a visually impaired person could knock over?
Not so much, but I'm the oldest of five. So I was 15 at the time. My youngest sister was five. So there was, like, toys and things.
To trip over.
Yeah, because, you know, it never was an issue before. So it was a learning experience for everyone at home because they then had to start keeping things out of my way and, you know, becoming more aware. So it was a big, like, it was life-changing for the whole family. I can't say that there was just a particular time when I was like, sort of, this is it. But that, probably around that time when my consultant told me that I was never going to see again, I suppose that was sort of the reality check, sort of, right, this is how it is.
I've been reading quite a bit about you, and I don't know if this is true, but I hear you were back in school within weeks.
Yeah, I was so bored. You know, I had nothing to do.
How did your teachers react to you when you went back as a totally blind person, and the other students as well?
There was never any issue. My teachers were fantastic. They would have sat and recorded notes onto which was then cassette tapes for me. They did everything they could to help me as much as they could. There was never any issue with the rest of the girls in my class or my year or anything.
So you did your GCSEs and A-level,
yeah,
and then went to Queen's,
yeah,
to study music.
Yeah.
How was that?
I loved it. Again, I was just determined that I was just going to follow the path that I should be following. I always wanted a career in music, so that was what I always would have done.
But music's always been a love of yours, and I know you worked, yeah, at RNIB, yeah, for a while, but you left RNIB and you set up a music academy here in Omagh.
Yeah.
Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kiva. How are you?
Good.
How did you get on this week?
Good, yeah.
Any issues or anything? Are we happy enough with everything?
There's probably a few parts, but I'll go from the start.
Go from the start and see how it goes.
You're in charge of quite a big operation there, 140 odd, yeah, students. What are the challenges for you as a visually impaired person of running that type of music academy?
I suppose I'm very fortunate in that I have fantastic staff. All the tutors are extremely like-minded and we all help each other out. So I will go to them with queries, obviously, about what's written on the sheet music, because I teach all my students to read music. And because I used to read music, I'm able to do that. But the business side, the less fun side, has to be done too.
Is it lots of access technology?
Yeah, I have my laptop that I use with VoiceOver. I have a Mac, and I would be lost without it. Can we just stop it at the end of that section there, Kiva?
Yeah.
Do you see how, as you're playing that, you're kind of hesitating before, yeah, you...
Are there any aspects of your job where you occasionally think, God, I wish I could see?
Yeah, all the time. Obviously, it would be much easier to teach if I could see, because I would know exactly what my students are doing and I would know exactly what's on the page. Like, I have to go and listen to the music and learn the music that I'm going to teach every student myself. And I have well over 30 students. So there's a lot of planning involved. And if I could just lift the sheet music and look at it, it would be much easier. But I love it.
I can't quite remember who said this, but I've heard that laughter is the music of the soul. If that's the case, they'll be making plenty of music here at the Bridge Community Centre in Lisbon. While many of us will be familiar with yoga, laughter yoga is certainly new to me. Apparently, laughter can have a whole range of therapeutic benefits, and it isn't as new as I thought it was. Joanna Toner is totally blind and is about to get the latest of her laughter yoga sessions underway. Joanna, what is laughter yoga?
Well, laughter yoga was created about 23 years ago by a cardiologist in India. And he was very concerned about the general health of his patients and wanted to do something to improve things in general for people. So he got together with a few of his friends in a park in Mumbai and they just started telling jokes for each other. And within a couple of days, the group had grown in popularity and everybody turned up on these days to have a good laugh, really. But what they discovered after a while is that the jokes ran out. So Dr. Madan Kataria, who was the fellow who started all this off, he went away and did some research and he discovered that our bodies cannot tell the difference between real laughter and simulated laughter. So he created a series of exercises and games that can help us simulate some laughter and get the same effects as if we were with our best friends having a good laugh or watching our favourite comedy. So to start off with, because we're all a little bit rusty, we haven't done this for a month, we need to warm up our laughs. So I'm going to start off and I want everybody to introduce themselves and then laugh and tell me one thing about your week and then laugh.
Hello, I'm Katie. And this week I went to the gym and did an exercise class and my arm has been killing me ever since.
One of the objectives appears to be to encourage people to lose their inhibitions. Do you find that as a blind person that really helps you?
Yes, because most of us who come here are visually impaired. There is this sort of sensation of, well, nobody can see me anyway, so why should I worry? I have noticed occasionally somebody comes who's never been before, and, you know, you have to kind of almost be overly welcoming so as they don't feel out of place.
Musical orchestra. This is music of the soul is laughter, so now we're going to prove it. Pick an instrument and play it laughing.
My name is Adam. And I spent Wednesday afternoon getting lots of food at Belfast Market.
What skills do you use to teach the sessions? Because obviously you can't actually see what the people taking part are doing.
Yeah, that can be quite difficult, and it's taken a little bit of getting used to. And some groups are better than others. It depends on the dynamic of the group. With a fresh group that I've never taught before, I'm very open, and I tell the group that I can't see what they're doing and I can't see if they're running into any trouble. So I make it the group responsibility to look out for each other and for people to take responsibility for how they're feeling. And, you know, I'm not going to pick up on it. I think that's probably a lesson for life as well, that, you know, we do need to take responsibility for how we feel and you speak up.
I'm Shelley. I'm a South African. I've been living in Northern Ireland for about 24 years.
Now, you're fully sighted and Joe is totally blind. Mm-hmm. How does that work from your point of view? How well does she interact with the group?
I don't really see a difference between a sighted instructor and Joe, because Joe is very aware of what's going on. What I've observed from knowing Joe is that she can hear the different nuances.
My name's Lynn. And we have had a distinguished guest staying with us this week.
And I think that Tom should join
in. I think Tom should join in. Yeah.
Right, so introduce yourself, please, Tom.
I'm struggling to maintain my composure. My name is Tom. I've had an interesting week, a week of two halves. The second half of the week has been spent here in Northern Ireland, which has been amazing, as it always is.
Excellent. And as we do at the end of every laughter exercise, we do some clapping. So it's ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. Ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. It's about increasing your confidence and trying to get to your comfort zone. And you don't learn or improve or become tougher unless you push yourself.
The artist with the most viewer votes tonight and therefore the winner of The Voice 2013 is... It's Andrea!
In 2013, Andrea Begley, who's visually impaired, won the BBC talent contest The Voice. The aim of the show is to find a pop star based on their voice and not their appearance. In the early stages of the competition, judges sit with their backs to the contestants and base their judgments on what they can hear.
In the arms of the angel, flying away from here, from this dark, cold hotel room, and the endlessness that you feel.
I've come to the Crescent Arts Centre near Queen's University in Belfast to have a chat with Andrea. Andrea, you've performed in here, haven't you?
Yes, that's right, Tom. I've had the privilege of performing in the Crescent Arts Centre and attending a number of their classes on Irish traditional singing and on songwriting as well.
The angel, may you find.
The the opportunity to perform in The Voice came along for me as a bit of a coincidence. It actually came through a contact of a friend of mine in music circles in Belfast, who said that the judges were coming from the production side over to Belfast to maybe look at some talent that might be interested in performing in the show. I think it did appeal to me, the fact that the judges wouldn't look at you and wouldn't be judging you on your appearance and maybe on your stage performance if you were moving around or doing all the other things that people typically expect from musicians or pop singers, if you like.
In the arms of the angel, flag away from here.
It must be quite difficult for you as a visually impaired person with very limited vision to feel totally comfortable on a stage, especially in a television studio.
There's certainly a number of barriers there, and in a way people might say actually we have an advantage because we can't see all the cameras and the lights and all the hundreds of people staring you in the face, which possibly is true, but equally you can find difficulties with just even getting on and off the stage can be a challenge. But I was with the production staff, who were always very helpful and very friendly.
I know from my own experience, you know, just even having my photo taken, I find it hard to look properly at the camera, to look directly at it. How did you find that in terms of television cameras?
It's definitely difficult. There were cameras really at all angles, up above and to the sides. And really, I was reliant very much on the production staff leading me to the correct part of the stage and indicating to me how I should direct my body or what direction I should look. But certainly it is a bit of a difficult one, and you want to make sure you're facing the audience and not facing sideways.
How did you deal with the dilemma of announcing that you do have a visual impairment?
I actually thought that I would be able to tell if the judges had turned, because I'd hear the noise. There's usually a noise whenever their seats turn or they press the button. But I actually found out later that that noise doesn't